This is the chapel tape for October 10th, 1961. Dr. Staley is bringing the service.
Let us look unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. Eternal Father, Holy God, we thank thee for these times that we come apart in fellowship and worship. In truth, we would worship thee with the reverence of thine only begotten Son. With his gratitude for thy directions, for thy grace, for thy comfort, and for thy forgiveness. We dare to ask blessings of thee because in truth we would be blessings. Bless us that we may bless others. Fill us with thy love, that it may flow abundantly through us. Teach us more and more to love because thou didst first love us. And as we express our love this morning for thee and feel the flood of it moving through us toward others, we remember especially those facing the problems and the sorrows and the dangers of life, the young mother who has just discovered that she must undergo serious surgery. Give her the grace and comfort of thy presence as she thinks not only of the danger to her life, but of the future of her children. Bless all who have those personal problems that do so often beset us and deeply disturb us. Bless those who suffer around this world, those who are hungry, those who are separated by force of war's terror, from all that they knew and loved. May they discover that there is a love that will not let them go. Bless our Father this morning, those who ponder the problems of statecraft, those who hold seemingly in their hands, as far as men can see, the fate of nations and of millions. Renew their minds in righteousness. Give to our leaders especially that grace which sustains others in their desires, so like our own, in the beginning of this nation. Help us to befriend those who need friendship, to strengthen those whose hands and powers are weak, to stand for justice in the lives of all men and of all nations. Bless this seminary. Warm our hearts toward each other that we may know the blessings of Christian concern and fellowship, and use the moments that we have in this chapel and the hours that we spend in the classrooms to make us able, in the name of Christ and concerned in the Spirit of Christ, to help others. For in his name we ask it. Amen. Brethren, these Tuesday mornings in chapel are given over, most of them at least, to me. Not that I may always speak on Tuesday in chapel, but that we may have room for visitors and so on, and that, as occasionally happens, we may mention matters of common concern to us that do not fit precisely into any set program or order of service. And this morning I take a moment to thank all of those students who helped us and the Southern Baptist Convention in the matter of the survey that they made recently, trying to find out how to improve ministerial education over the whole convention. May I mention also that now, in this early part of the year, is a time when we respectfully and rightly, certainly in right spirit, ask those who are here and who believe with us that we have something pretty fine to offer to those students who are setting out for ministerial and religious education. May help us to let others know that we would like to have them here. Write to your friends if you have friends who are ministerial students in the colleges. Write to whomever you can who might help us in this matter. Not so much us as our denomination, and I believe through our denomination, when we rightly understand it and use it, it is a help to God's cause. As you know, ministerial students are down in nearly all our colleges. In any way you can, rightly motivate and inspire young people that they might volunteer into this full-time Christian service and into the ministry. And then another matter that is somewhat personal and yet of general interest too, I think. An alumnus just last week said to me, every year incoming juniors think that you're not interested in them and that you don't seem to be much interested in the seminary because so frequently they fail to see you for long periods of time. I regret that as much as any. May I aver and avow my interest in everyone in this seminary. But you see, one of my chief interests is in raising money or helping, doing the best I can for my part to raise money to help students who come to those tremendous obstacles or bumps in the road that might throw them clear off the road and out of the seminary. And a great many times when I am gone, that's the purpose of my going. It is seldom, if I may say so rather frankly, that I accept engagements to preach or to go places now that I do not see a possibility of doing something about this or other matters of direct interest to the seminary. I do care about every member of this family. I care about the spirit that shall pervade Southeastern. I want us to live conscious of the Holy Spirit and in fine spiritual relationships with each other. And I would do anything I know to advance the spread and the effect of such spirit. I care about the classes and the work that is done in them. I am concerned that every man, knowing his consecration to God, shall dedicate himself in his classwork to serious study in order that he may be the better servant. I care about our attitude and our gratitude toward the Southern Baptist Convention. Nothing has lifted my spirits higher recently, I think, than that facsimile, that full-page facsimile of a letter One of our graduates of last year wrote to Dr. Porter Ruth, in which he expressed his gratitude to Baptists for what they had done in establishing and maintaining Stetson University, which was the school he attended through college years, and Southeastern Seminary, and through them, in a sense, all the colleges and seminaries supported by Baptists. I care about the financial and the physical and the spiritual welfare of each one. And then I would mention this. Students each year have come expressing questions or raising questions about the naivete and the old-fashionedness they find here, because in the colleges which they attended, they found what they think is more a more progressive, a more liberal, a more modern spirit. And they frequently express a little lack of respect for our attitude and our understanding of the scriptures. And others find teachings here which they doubt because the teachings seem out of line with what they have been taught by conservative parents or pastors or professors. Now, this statement, you are absolutely not required in either case to accept another's conviction. But we do expect you to have a very serious and sober and ready attitude toward truth, to be seeking aspects of truth, revelations of truth, with an open mind. And may I venture to read, I shall not tell you from whom I read, but I think these words, whoever might have written them, are words that may give us some insight, some comfort, and some direction. You will never meet truth in the form of propositions which you can learn or write down and take home. But you may encounter it in one sentence of a book, or of a conversation, or of a lecture, or of a sermon. The sentence is not the truth, but it may open you up for the truth, and it may liberate you from the bondage to opinions and prejudices and conventions. Suddenly, true reality appears like the brightness of lightning in a formerly dark place. Or, slowly, true reality appears like a landscape when the fog becomes thinner and thinner and finally disappears. New darknesses, new fogs will fall upon you, but you have experienced at least once the truth and freedom given you by truth. Or you may be grasped by the truth in an encounter with a piece of nature, its beauty and its transitoriness, or in an encounter with a human being in friendship or estrangement, in love or indifference or in hate, or in an encounter with yourself in a sudden insight into the hidden strivings of your soul, in disgust and even hatred of yourself, in reconciliation perhaps with and acceptance of yourself. In these encounters you meet truth, the truth which liberates from illusions and false authorities, from enslaving anxieties, desires, and hostilities, from a wrong self-rejection and a wrong self-affirmation. And I pursue just another very few moments this idea of the vision that comes to one. I would recommend to you a book that stilled me for several weeks when I was in Europe teaching for a few months in our seminary in Ruislikon and just chanced upon Bishop Kirk's great book called The Vision of God. The first spare time you have, you might well spend it with that great work. But to each and in so many ways for each, is given visions. Paul, you remember, said after his experience on the road to Damascus, he had fallen on his face, and I think I shall read a verse or two here, and then the master spoke to him and said, "Rise and stand upon thy feet, For I have appeared unto thee for this purpose, to make thee a minister and a witness both of these things which thou hast seen and of those things in which I will appear unto thee, delivering thee from the people and from the Gentiles unto whom I now send thee, to open their eyes and to turn them from darkness to light and from the power of Satan unto God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and inheritance among them which are sanctified or separated by the faith that is in me. These words then, whereupon, O King Agrippa, I was not disobedient unto the heavenly vision. We have felt the call. Sometimes we tend to forget the vision. Those precious insights into the nature of God, the very essence or being, the expression of the selfhood of Jesus. May I give you two or three simple personal examples? When I was about 9 in Washington, D.C., my preacher father had a man come to hold a meeting in our church, and he stayed in our home. I remember only that his name was Stuart, that he was fairly fat, but very pleasant, and especially kind toward boys, and this boy of 9. But one morning during the meeting, and by the way, he had a fountain pen, the first one I think I ever saw. They were rare in those days. I'm getting along. And I was enchanted by that thing. And one morning I discovered that he had left it in the living room instead of putting it in his pocket and taking it to his bed. And as I went to school, I think I was in the 3rd grade, I picked it up and took it. And when I got home at noon, everybody was hunting the fountain pen, and there were my fingers. Those old pens, Doctor, you remember how they leaked. Telltale, absolute evidence. Father beat the tar out of me. He whipped me good. But you know what Mr. Stewart did? He went downtown and paid $3 for a white Plymouth Rock hen, which he gave me to have as a pet in the backyard. And I caught a vision of the grace of kindness, of understanding, of one who is able to put himself in the shoes even of a boy and realize how he may be enchanted by the world, but may be led above the world by a forgiving and understanding heart. And I recall another time when I caught a deeper vision, I think, of God. You see, we lost our firstborn child when he was 4 and a half. And after that, I ran around with the young doctor who had come in at the very last to try to save the boy, Dr. Smock, there in Louisville. And I'd go with him at night to make calls and sit in the car while he'd go in the house, and then we'd drive across town to another house. And one night, out near Churchill Downs, he went into a little four-room cottage and came out, and he said, "Boy, that's tough." I said, "What, Doc?" He said, "That boy's gonna die." The first thing, see that boy, I said, "How old is he?" "Oh," he said, "he's 4 or 5. And you can know what stirred in me. I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "He seems to have a combination. I believe," he said, "diphtheria and scarlet fever." At any rate, I said, "Can't you do anything for him?" He said, "I don't think we can. We might give him a shot, but I don't think it'd do any good." I said, "Let's give him a shot." He said, "We can't get one. The only place I know is the city infirmary, and it's closed." I said, "Let's go get the guy." And we went and got the guy, the keeper of the infirmary, and we got the shot, and we took it out to Churchill Downs, and that boy lived. I think I caught from that an understanding of the love of God and of what ought to be the love of us preachers and so many others, that all children are precious in God's sight, and that there are so many things we could do for them if we recognized their value and their worth. But the great vision, to which I'm called even in the midst of many failures to be true, is the vision that Paul talks about in the 5th chapter of Romans when he says, scarcely for a righteous man would one die. Peradventure, for a good man, one might be willing to die. But God commendeth his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And I get my theology straight then, brethren, if I may venture to teach for just a moment as we close. It is not the sacrifices we make, but the sacrifice that God made for us that brings salvation. May I no more my comfort draw from my frail hold on thee. In this alone rejoice with awe, thy mighty grasp of me. And when I try to understand another man's theology and venture to ask questions, one of the key questions I always ask is, do you find the center of your thinking, the center of your understanding of the Christian religion, in man's predicament or in God's grace? It is not the sacrifices we make, but the sacrifice God made for us that gives us the vision. And we may more and more, like Paul, say, whereupon I find myself unable to be disobedient to the heavenly vision, the truth revealed in the quiet understanding of my heart by God. May we bow in prayer. May thy blessings be upon us, our Father, as we worship, and then as we go, in these days when so much needs to be explained, affirmed, made clear. Give thy messengers power to preach with conviction that men can be reconciled unto God. Again, in thy name we ask it.